Hi, and thanks for joining us on Sexploration with Monica. Today, we are going to talk about a lesbian love affair that was so incendiary at the time that it was before you could actually say the word lesbian publicly. And in fact, Terry Baum is a bit of a historian in this regard and wrote a beautiful play about this fabulous love affair between the First Lady at the time, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Lorena Hickok, who was a renowned journalist. Thank you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica. I'm really excited to hear more of your story.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me, Monica. I'm thrilled to be here in this beautiful recording studio in the weird bowels of a...
of this station and here at Civic Center.
Yeah,
welcome.
This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore. Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica. Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun. Sexploration with Monica at sexplorationwithmonica.com.
Yeah, tell me about this love story between Lorena and the First Lady.
Lorena Hickok was the highest paid woman journalist of her day, which was the 20s and 30s. She had had some contact with Eleanor Roosevelt. This is 1932. So FDR is running for president for the first time. And she convinced her editor that Eleanor Roosevelt was worthy of having her own reporter following her. Now, Hick, her nickname was Hick. That's what everybody called her. Hick was, in fact, at that time, assigned to cover the candidate, FDR.
Oh.
But her editor said, oh, that's a great idea to have a reporter covering Mrs. Roosevelt. It's going to be you, which was this terrible demotion. From the candidate to the candidate's wife.
Oh.
So at that moment, he was just kind of being mean to her, you know?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But of course, at the moment, she was very upset, but ultimately it ended up changing her life
because then she fell in love.
She fell in love. They went on. The first thing that happened was there was a campaign train all over the country. The train could stop in all these little towns, and FDR could give a speech out of the back of the train.
Oh,
the back of the caboose had like a little platform.
Right.
So Hick was with Eleanor day and night, and she fell in love with Eleanor, and Eleanor fell in love with her also. And the evidence that Eleanor fell in love is in the 2,336 letters that Eleanor wrote to Hick during the 30 years. They were not lovers that whole time.
Mm.
They became friends at a certain point.
Right.
But in the very beginning, they were lovers, and their wonderful letters from Eleanor, you know, saying, oh, I ache to hold you close. Things that you really wouldn't say to your close friends. You would only say to someone you were having sex with.
Right. Yeah. I heard they went to Yosemite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me more about what you know from, I mean, you had to be a little bit of a historian just to write this play.
Well, I did a lot of research, and there are several books published that I could read. And I also spent a week at the archives, the Roosevelt Archives in Hyde Park, doing research. That's the only time I did real research, looking at original documents and things like that. And I had this idea I was going to discover some letter from Eleanor to Hick that had never, ever been printed before, you know, published before.
Sure.
But it turned out that Eleanor's handwriting was so terrible. I could not read it at all. And I asked people at the library, how do you decipher what she said? And they said, we get together as a committee and try to figure it out. But it was still pretty exciting to be there looking at all this original material.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
So her handwriting was so bad.
Mainly she dictated to her secretary.
Got it.
But of course, when she's writing Hick personal letters,
she didn't
saying things that she doesn't want that published, then she's writing it. Yeah.
Sure.
Exactly.
Can you listen to the play now on Vimeo? How could people find more? We're going to play the trailer in just a bit, but I want to kind of give people a feel for what else they can explore about this love story.
If you go to the website of my theater, which is liliththeater.com, mm-hmm. LILITH THEATER, you can find out a lot more about Hick. And one of the things that you can watch, there's a full-length video. The one that you watched was just a few excerpts from it, but there is a full-length video of a performance I did at the Baltimore Theater Project.
Oh.
And it turned out the night the filmmaker came was the night of one of those special magical performances where I can go somehow end up going beyond what I've ever done before, you know?
Sure.
You don't know when that's going to happen. I'm always very good, but this goes beyond that, I think. It's really, I think, a very exciting performance. And the whole thing is on video.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
And if you go to Lilith Theater, that's where you can get to that video.
Paul, do you have the trailer ready for us?
Here we go.
When Eleanor Roosevelt became First Lady in 1933, in the depths of the Great Depression, she had a lover. Lorena Hickok, the most famous woman journalist of her day. 2,336 letters from Eleanor to Hick document their relationship.
Hick, darling, oh, how good it was to hear your voice tonight. Words are so inadequate to tell you what it meant. I go to sleep thinking of you and repeating our little saying, "Je t'aime, je t'adore." No one is like you, Hick. I love you, and good night. E.R.
These letters inspired Terry Baum's new solo play, Hick, A Love Story, the romance of Lorena Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt. It premiered in San Francisco in July 2014, playing to sold-out houses. The San Francisco Bay Guardian wrote, "Baum brilliantly captures Hick's transformations." The San Francisco Examiner called Hick a real love story like no other, a compelling one-woman show.
My boss, no doubt. Oh, just leave me alone. Let me complete the damn story, will you? Oh, well. Don't you have anything better to do than to plague a poor new town who's just trying to do her job? Don't hang up. I got a great idea. It's gonna just listen. It's gonna put the AP ahead of all the wire services. You gotta hire a gal reporter to cover Mrs. Roosevelt. Well, no, she's not your typical candidate's wife. Come on, boss. Hey, the Republicans call her a goddamn communist for trying to put an end to child labor. Now, tell me that's not a story. Candidate's wife, called a commie, huh? Oh, this Roosevelt dame has enormous dignity. She's a person. I felt like she could see my soul. Oh, she was my kind of girl, all right. And I edged closer just so I could touch her shoulder and casually reach past her, brushing her as I reached for the salt. You know, I must have looked pretty silly, like a love-starved cocker spaniel. Every once in a while, she was sneaking a look at me. Darling, I want to touch you everywhere. I know it might seem strange because you've never been with a woman, but I promise I'll go slow. She put her hand over my mouth to stop me, and she laughed. She told me she'd gone to an English boarding school. Well, I see some of you have been to the same boarding school. I've gone to me for the first time, and it's with the wife of the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces. It's daunting. I have a dream. I have a dream that FDR found out about Eleanor and me and ordered the Air Force to bomb my apartment. An hour ago, Eleanor read me FDR's inaugural address. He's done it. He talks about putting people to work with government jobs. Oh, Jesus. How we need a president who believes in that. He's going to end the goddamn greed and lies of the banks by regulating them. He says people need to make a living, but they need more than money. It's a good idea, isn't it? Oh, my boss has been hounding me to bring him some inside scoop on the Roosevelt. Damn pest. I could go to hell. I'm back in New York. It's over. 4 days after the inauguration, it's over. The White House changed everything. It's for her. For God. This is it.
Hick, my dearest, I cannot go to bed tonight without a word to you. I felt a little as though a part of me was leaving when you left. You have grown to be so much a part of my life that it is empty without you, even though I'm busy every minute. Oh, darling, I felt I had brought you so much discomfort and hardship today, and almost more heartache than you could bear, and I don't want to make you unhappy. Oh, my love, and I shall be saying to you over thought waves in a few minutes, good night, my dear one. Angels guard thee, God protect thee, my love enfold thee all the night through. Always yours, E.R.
Oh, I am the luckiest gal in the world!
I don't think people now really understand how taboo it was to even say the word lesbian.
Well, it wasn't said. I mean,
more than that,
that was
even among sex positive circles, they referred to lesbians as the others. In advertisements for gay bars. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that.
Exactly. It was way under under the radar.
The wonderful thing is that it was so under the radar that they could run around together.
Get
all
away
the
with
time.
It.
Yeah, exactly. In fact,
stolen glances.
Yeah. In fact, and Hick was actually called first friend by the press. And when Eleanor's daughter had an adulterous affair, which was huge crisis, you know, in the White House, and all that, she was married and so was her lover. So, you know, they did get married and two families were broken up by it. Mm. But Eleanor writes Hick and says, how lucky you are not a man.
Oh.
In other words, she was acknowledging that they benefited
from the
fact that it was simply inconceivable.
People couldn't even think that it was a relationship, that kind of relationship.
Not at all. It was beyond. There were
so under the radar
times in the press that there were innuendos about it being a sexual relationship. But, you know, I mean, the press had a completely different attitude towards, especially the president. I mean, they were all into hiding that the president was in a wheelchair.
Right.
You know, it was not about telling the truth about the president. It was about hiding the things that might diminish his stature. They certainly were about that with Eleanor, too. Her boss, her editor, wouldn't leave her alone. He wanted inside dope, and he expected to get it from Hick. And finally, Hick had to quit her job.
Oh.
And that was a major transformation.
Because she didn't want to give up the grit about Eleanor.
No.
She wasn't going to play that game.
If she did, then that would be the end of the relationship.
Even though, I mean, she couldn't figure out a way to do it, like, so that her editor would be happy. And then,
no, there wasn't any way.
Right.
No, there was no way she could do it. Anything that she wrote that was news that she got from Eleanor in any way, even if it was not meaningful news, would have been the end of their relationship.
Right.
So she had to have a true firewall between that, and her boss wouldn't accept it. So that was the end of her career as a reporter. And that was pretty sad because she had other jobs.
That must have been tragic.
It was because
that
was her calling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was even, I guess, dreaming about a Nobel Prize and all kinds of
writing. Well, that's in my play. I mean, a play about a biographical play, I don't feel obligated to stick to the fact it's not a biography.
Right, right.
Okay. It's an exercise in imagining. Well, I mean, I have them go to bed together, you know.
Right.
Are you saying you took a little creative license?
A lot of creative license. Although one of the most outrageous things in the play is, in fact, factual.
Yeah.
When they go into the bathroom together, there's a point when it's when Eleanor first moves into the White House, and Hick is still, they've become lovers, and Hick is still covering her, and it's chaos in the White House because, as you can imagine when you think about it, this whole change between the ex-president living there and the current president living there has to happen in one day.
Right?
Because until the next president is inaugurated, the guy who lost the election is still president.
Yeah, that lame duck is still there, right?
Yeah, he's still president if something happens, you know?
Right.
So it was total chaos, and Hick was trying to interview her, and they went into a bathroom in the White House and locked the door. And how we know about it is one of the people who worked in the White House as a housekeeper noticed it. And in fact, a lot of the servants in the White House noticed it. And they thought that was too far. So we know
they were scandalized at the time.
Yeah, servants were scandalized. Oh,
so this locked themselves in the bathroom. Yeah,
so this is only in the account of this one woman who wrote a book about working in the White House. So it was my position that people don't go into a bathroom and lock the door just to do interviews. And so I have them in the play go off stage, and Hick comes back in all hot and bothered and her vest unbuttoned and all that.
Oh, right.
So, Monica, you weren't the person that originated interviews in a bathroom stall. Just letting you know.
Well, yeah. That was not a recorded interview.
Well, it just feels like the world has changed so much in these years as we are becoming more open as a society. At that time, it was so scandalous.
Well, you know, even when Ken Burns did his documentary about the personal lives of the Roosevelts, he covered FDR's dalliances with women as if that was real news. And he wouldn't talk about
Eleanor's
relationship with Hick. And when he was challenged by that, he said, well, that's tabloid stuff. So in other words, an adulterous affair.
Even between... I don't respect that.
So he can exploit certain things.
But or not.
To his
adulterous affair between a man and a woman is part of history.
Oh, yeah. And it was the president, but, you know, if it was,
it
you
was
know,
still
Eleanor.
Part of history, but an adulterous affair between
two women
is not part of history.
Yeah.
That's sleazy gossip. So that was not long ago.
Oh, and we know that we disagree with that, right? Because the first lady was definitely part of history.
Right.
She really, she's one of the first ladies that actually had so much to do with the presidency. She was instrumental in every one of FDR's moves, right?
Well, she had her own track, actually.
Right.
Her own thing that she went out and talked about, and she was far to the left of FDR most of the time.
Interesting.
And some of the Democrats went in to meet with FDR and they said, would you please tell her to shut up?
Oh,
and he said, I have no control over her.
Yeah. I think he said something to the effect of like, I'd like to see you try. Yeah. And it's kind of, absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah.
Terry, this all started. I mean, you are a graduate of UC Berkeley. Nope. You're not Santa Barbara. I'm sorry. UC Santa Barbara. Yeah. Right. And your writing of plays started in what, 1972? And you've been kind of just prolific ever since, haven't you?
Well, I've been in theater forever, I feel. I feel we all start out in theater. You know, we all play games when we're young.
Right.
We're pretending to be other people. But most people stop doing that at a certain age. And I never did.
So you didn't grow out of it?
No, I never grew out of it. I started writing plays collaborating on plays with other people in 72.
Okay.
Yeah. The first play that I wrote that was real play, and I wrote it in collaboration with my lifelong collaborator, Carolyn Myers, was Dos Lesbos. That was 1981.
Right.
And that really was the first time that the audience saw lesbians portrayed from a lesbian point of view.
Yeah.
In our audiences here on the West Coast.
And what do you think the difference is when you are lesbians telling your own story versus watching other people's portrayal of lesbian love?
Well, mostly other people's portrayals of lesbians involved them being either vampires or committing suicide.
Oh.
Yeah.
You mean actual vampires?
Yeah, there's a major lesbian vampire theme.
Yeah. No.
There's a genre. Well, there's literally a genre.
No, she's not wrong because, you know, a lot of it is like the Twilight.
Anything to sell that ticket.
That's sexuality. Twilight. And, I mean, usually they just were miserable and killed themselves.
Yeah.
So that's something that was a main theme. Or they're evil. Evil was a major meme. So that went along with being a vampire. But, you know, Sartre's famous play, No Exit, where he has three people in hell.
You know?
But the one who is the lesbian, I mean, the other two did terrible things. One was a collaborator during the war and betrayed his country. That was the man. The one other woman killed her child. But the evil thing that the lesbian did was be a lesbian.
Right.
Which, that was equivalent to being a traitor or killing your child.
Wow.
You know, yeah, that's how, that was Sartre, who was a very, very, very radical person and politically, but yet he saw being a lesbian as being
the worst thing that you could do.
Inherently evil, yeah.
Now, going back to Dos Lesbos, you actually did that, and it was so critically acclaimed that it actually was translated into Dutch, Swedish, Italian, and continues to produce around the world currently?
Well, not, let's see, has there been, I can't remember when the last production was, but Dos Lesbos was the inspiration for the first anthology of plays by lesbians in the history of the universe.
Oh.
One of the women in the audience saw Dos Lesbos and she said, oh, this is the first play I've ever seen from a lesbian point of view. Right. And she thought there must be others.
And
she looked, she went to the bookstores and the library. She could not find a book of plays by lesbians about lesbians. And she said, well, I'm going to edit it.
Right.
So that came out in 85.
Right. That was Lesbians Places Please.
Yes.
Right. And that was originally edited down by Kate McDermott.
Yes.
At one
exactly.
point. So.
Yes, it was. That spread all over the world because
right.
it was a time when, let's say 85, that gay people were looking for literature about themselves. So that book went everywhere and was translated into a lot of different languages. And the production was at the time that they had, it was World Pride 2000. They in Western Europe, they have a big gay pride festival in one major city each year. They don't mm-hmm. have every major city doing their own pride festival. Mm-hmm. So they chose Rome for 2000 because the Catholic Church was also celebrating it as the 2000th birthday of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. So it was a direct challenge to the Catholic Church.
Of course.
And there was a huge controversy about gay pride happening at the same time.
Yeah, I bet there was.
Yeah, and the
like drama.
Well, the fascists were marching. It was
gay people are like bringing their rainbow everything.
Well, yeah, there was a big question about whether the gay people were going to get permission to have their march.
Oh.
And then were they going to get permission to have it past the Colosseum? Because the Colosseum, which is where the gladiators mm-hmm. fought and killed each other and Christians were thrown to lions, mm-hmm. is the symbol of human rights abuses in Europe and especially Italy. So any march about human rights absolutely wants to march past the Colosseum. So they did finally get permission to march, but not by the Colosseum, past the Colosseum, but they did it anyhow.
Oh, good. Good.
So we were there for the march, and, you know, the Pope was really trying to stop everything.
Right.
And he simply couldn't.
Yeah.
Because the Romans were not offended by World Pride. The Romans were totally okay with it. So I always like to say that Dos Lesbos offended the Pope.
Yeah.
You know, during World Pride.
Good.
But the Pope was very offended by World Pride.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how can people find more about your work?
The easiest way is to go to the website of my theater, liliththeater.com. LILITHTHEATER. So Lilith. Word Lilith, and then the word theater with it spelled E-R at the end, .com. And that has a lot of information about all the plays, any performances that are coming up, and also how you can get my anthology, which was published in 2019 by Exit Press, which includes 10 of my plays, including Hick.
Yeah.
And including Dos Lesbos.
And tell me a little bit about your blog. I know that you were really excited you had to write a blog today.
Oh, that's so, right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because of the indictment.
Exactly.
I really felt like, okay, I've been watching, I've been trying to figure out what to say. The people, my people who subscribe to my blog are...
Yeah,
I call them blogalinis.
Uh-huh.
So what do I have to say to my blogalinis about this momentous event of the former president being indicted for trying to overturn the election.
Yeah.
So I finished. Fortunately, I looked up to see the time or I might have been. So my blog, you can subscribe to it on the website. And you can also go to blogspot.com. It's terrybaum.blogspot.com. But I like to send it out as an email, and it covers a lot of things. It's not always political. sometimes it's about, you know, wonderful play that I've seen, or me rehearsing a play, what it's like for me to be in the middle of rehearsal for something, or I'm really into obituaries. It's so much fun. You find out about the lives of all these people that you don't never heard of sometimes, or you knew of, but you didn't know all the...
Oh, all the deets.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I just did one on Tina Turner, which kind of combined...
Yeah, tell me more about that.
Obituary about a celebrity.
Yeah.
And the time when Tina Turner was totally in the dumps, it's right after she left her husband.
Yeah, well, she was in an abusive relationship.
Very, yes. And but she was very trashed by the public for leaving him and talking about the abuse she was getting, and her career went into the toilet.
Wow.
And this was during the very first gay Olympics or leading up to it. Mm-hmm. So she, who couldn't get a gig anywhere, became the lead performer at the first gay Olympics in 85 or something like that. So Tina Turner's life intersected with my life.
Right.
Because of that. And so it was a story about the politics of the gay Olympics. Ultimately, they had to change the name to the Gay Games because the United States Olympics sued them.
The committee.
Yeah. Even though there's a crab cooking Olympics and a Special Olympics and
the gay Olympics was too much.
There are hundreds of Olympics. But
interesting.
Yeah. So they had to change the name. It's now the Gay Games. But anyhow, so it was an intersection of celebrity obituary, my personal life, and gay history.
Right.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
To have all that happening in one block.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, thank you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica. And really enjoyed learning more about this exciting love story and lesbian.
Yeah, Hank, a love story. I will be, I hope, performing it at the Marsh soon.
Excellent.
It's not scheduled yet, but
sure.
We have talked in the past about it, and I'm hoping that that will be happening.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful story, and Hick is just an amazing person. I love her so much.
Yeah.
I really do. And of course, Eleanor Roosevelt. It's always great to learn more about Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eleanor Roosevelt is responsible for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
Oh.
She was appointed to the United Nations after her husband had died. She was appointed by Truman, and she was on this committee to create this Declaration of Human Rights, which is known in every country of the world.
It's
radical, even from our viewpoint today.
Yeah.
Like you have a right to leisure in the Declaration of Human Rights. And it never would have been passed by the United Nations if it hadn't been for
the First Lady being behind it.
She was at that time known as First Lady of the World.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool.
Oh, it was an incredible project to get into, and the history of these two women, both separately and together, was just so compelling and moving to me.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I loved it. Yay. Yeah. Lovely. Oh, I'm so excited to hear. And I also am really looking forward to the play at the Marsh Theater.
Right.
When it happens.
So you can read it. You can see it if you go to the website, liliththeater.com, and you can also buy my anthology One Dykes Theater by going to the website, and you can get on my blog by going to the website. So I'm telling you, this is a fabulous website, folks. You can spend a lot of time on it.
They're looking at it right now as we talk right now. They're scrolling. See, they can actually see your website. So there you go.
So it's liliththeater.com.
Cool.
LilithTheater.com. And Lilith was the first Jewish woman. She's in the Jewish Bible before Eve.
Yeah.
But she was too uppity to lie beneath Adam. So she was exiled from Eden.
I have heard that story.
Yes.
That's why they have the kind of the Lilith Fair.
Right, exactly.
The, yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah,
wasn't.
But when I started Lilith Theater, it was the only Lilith going on.
Interesting. Yes. Before.
Well, that's what happens, you know, when you're an old person. You find out you were the first to do some things.
That's cool. Yeah, that's really cool. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica.
Thanks
and Paul. Thank you so much for being my token straight guy once again. And thanks for joining us.
You can subscribe to Sexploration with Monica on iTunes and have new episodes delivered automatically. Or download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.